Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Welcome to Beyond the Game. My name is Gregan, and today I'm going to be chatting with Meg, also known as Meg Sounds Like Egg.
I've worked since the age of 15, pre-streaming, and still now I have a job alongside streaming because I never, ever, ever want people to feel like they have to put themselves out financially for me.
Was that your goal when you were growing up, was to be a musician?
I wanted to be my own artist. I wanted to write music, and it just didn't work out. I think, you know, I was a very insecure teenager.
But you've mentioned your family and yourself are quite, you know, strong women, and you talk back when someone treats you badly.
Yeah.
How has that affected your experience in gaming and the way people interact with you?
I wanted to make it clear, and I wanted them to know that I wasn't going to tolerate their behavior. But a lot of the times I just want and hope that the things I say to them make them not do it again.
Make sure to follow for future episodes and let us know who you want to hear from next. I hope you enjoy this conversation as we get to know Meg beyond the game. Meg.
Hello.
Hello, welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome to London, actually. Not just welcome to Beyond the Game, but just moved to London.
Mm-hmm.
Big step for you.
Big city, newbie.
How are you feeling?
Good. It's been a long-term dream of mine. You know, I used to come into London when I was young with my dad and always was like, oh my God, it's so amazing. So like to be here now is a little surreal.
And you managed to do that by going full-time as a content creator.
Who'd have thunk?
Yeah, and that was, I mean, I was having a little look earlier on, September 2021, you put out a tweet saying, I'm going to go full-time as a content creator.
Yeah.
So before that, you would have been doing content creation, you'd been making some money with it, but that was where you took that big jump and went, I'm going to give the full go at making money out of this,
mm-hmm.
paying my rent with the content creation.
Yeah.
How has that journey started? Where did you start getting into content creation?
So, I mean, I've always been quite theatrical. I grew up doing music. I used to do like acting and dancing. Wasn't very good at dancing, but we didn't talk about that. And then I went to university to do music, moved home afterwards, which I never thought I'd do. I thought, you know, I'd go away to uni and that would be it. I'd be like flying and making music and I would just never have to move back home. And then COVID hit, so obviously it was all a big shock, and I found myself becoming less interested with pursuing music as a career. I was so passionate about it that any form of failure or any time I didn't sort of like push myself to write a song, I would beat myself up for hours and be like, you're a terrible musician. And then I was familiar with content creation and streaming through my sister, who was a partner streamer at the time. So I'd kind of been on a few of her streams and I love her, but she is so bad at engaging with her chat. So I would kind of go on her streams and I would seriously engage with her chat and they'd always be like, oh, Meg, you should stream. And then I remember it got to New Year's Eve 2020, and I hate New Year's Eve. I'm one of those people, I feel like you either love it or you absolutely hate it. And I was the absolutely hate it kind of person, because I would just struggle. I'd be like, it's another year to potentially fail. And yeah, so I did a music stream on New Year's Eve of 2020. Hated it, had the worst time, was like bedridden for 3 days, like, And then I remember just getting up one day and I was like, I'm going to do a stream and play GTA 5. And yeah, the rest is history. I streamed like 5 days a week for the whole of lockdown, came off the back of it, decided to leave my job, and that's when I went full time. But it's funny you mention it, because I'm actually, I think I was full time content creation for about 3 months, and then I ended up getting another job, because I think if you are familiar with full time content creation, it's a bit of a slog, and financially sometimes not exactly what you're expecting. So I wanted to take away the financial burden and make sure it was just something I was enjoying and doing for the entertainment sort of side of it.
Yeah, doing it alongside other work. And you've managed to find a few jobs linked to the kind of content creation that you do, whether it be hosting, whether it be, you know, sponsored events, all that kind of stuff. You're starting to get involved in that a little bit more.
Yeah.
And we'll talk a little bit later on about that. But I'm interested in rewinding. Let's go back to early Meg and find out about you. You said about being quite theatrical.
Yeah.
But I'm more interested in where the gaming side of Meg came from. What was your sort of a journey and a relationship with gaming growing up?
So I was always familiar with gaming. We had a PS2. So we played like Rats Rock Angels, Simpsons Hit and Run, kind of like those OG games like Crash Bandicoot, everything like that. We loved the Dance Mac, Guitar Hero, the whole spiel. We got Nintendo Wii. And then I remember, I think the big sort of turning point for me was the Xbox 360. I didn't play the games, I watched. So my dad and my sister would always sit and play, and like Lara Croft Tomb Raider and sort of just games like that. And I was always immersed. I would just sit there for hours and watch them play, and I loved every second of it. And then I think the first kind of like intense game I kind of played on the Xbox 360 was Alien Isolation, which is like, now I'm older, I'm like, that was quite a big game, like in terms of it's super stealthy, quite jump scary, for me to kind of like really get invested in. And I'm pretty sure it was one of the first games I ever completed. But despite all of that, like I was very much surrounded with gaming. I never, ever, ever thought I'd be a gamer myself. Like I said, I loved watching it and I would immerse myself in watching other people play it. But just me, myself, I couldn't handle the competitiveness. I didn't like losing. I didn't like dying and then having to restart and do it all again. So to be honest, to now be gaming and especially playing a game like Valorant, you think, oh, that's really weird, because that's like the worst game for those kind of situations. But yeah, I love it now. I absolutely can't get enough of gaming. And I just think I love the people as well. I think you meet the most interesting people, and I've made friends for life from gaming as well, which again is a crazy concept to me, because it was always my sister who had online friends. But to know that I have friends who live in like Switzerland, America, like all of these amazing places, and to slowly meet them as well is just this amazing thing that I love, and I absolutely adore it.
Yeah, the connection that gaming has allowed all of us to have, especially with the esport being the center of a lot of those friendships for people, and traveling to a centralized location for big events and seeing everyone there. And you mentioned your sister there. Was your sister a big influence on the kind of games you played, or did you kind of diverge in the kind of games you chose to play as growing up?
Yeah, we always enjoyed similar games. She was much more of like a single solo player. Like I remember when we had our DS, and she would like play through the whole game, whereas I would kind of get fixated on certain things like dressing the character up, or like say if it was GTA 5, it would be driving around and following normal road rules. Like it wouldn't be like doing the campaigns or like, you know, go and fight drug lords or anything. I would literally just get in a car and I'd be like stopping at red lights and everything like that. So that was the kind of thing that I did with gaming, whereas she was much more involved in storylines. So I feel like I was a bit of a lame-o.
I want to see you try and play Valorant like that, like following the normal rules of society and just like, you know, walking. Oh, don't run here, you might slip over.
Imagine. Proper mum with it. But yeah, Valorant, she introduced me to it, because she also, honestly, I love my sister. She's such a powerhouse of a woman. And she did media at university and then very quickly became involved with the gaming industry. So she got a job at Roblox and decided to invest in her own like PC that she could game on, that she could work on. And my stepdad built it for her. So she came home to play on it. And then amidst the whole sort of like looking at how amazing the PC was, she was like, oh, this game's just come out called Valorant. we should play it. And I was like, oh, okay. Because I used to play this game. I can't remember the name of it, but it was like a capture the flag kind of game. Was obsessed with it. Couldn't get enough of it. It was just on the PC. And so she was like, oh, it's kind of similar to that with obviously the, like, you capture sites instead and things like that. And I remember playing my first game. I was raised. It was on Ascent. And we went and we planted the bomb on B site. And it was like a 1v1 clutch and I won. And just, I remember that feeling and the adrenaline that ran through my body in that moment. And I was like, I'm going to spend, because I didn't have much in savings. Like, just like from being furloughed at the time, I think I had about $1,000 in savings. And I was like, I'm going to blow it all on a PC. Even though I wasn't in like an intense gamer, I was like, I'm going to do it.
And I did for that. I thought you were going to say skins there.
Oh, I mean, look at me now. That is the case now. But yeah, at the time it was so big because I was so stingy as well. So like the idea of spending the first kind of ounce of savings that I had just on a PC because I won one round of Valorant, it was just like crazy. But I honestly got hooked in that moment. And then I had so much time on my hands that I was like, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, so you're part of the next generation of streamers who started during lockdown. It seems like a lot of people started there. We had Elam on the podcast. He mentioned how that was the case for him. So you're going to be growing a lot after lockdown here and hoping to sort of catch that that new wave of energy towards streaming. What's your thoughts on Twitch as a platform? So I don't want you to get yourself in trouble here, but I know you've mentioned before with some of your tweets around, you know, the whole idea of this can pay your rent as a content creator, that's fine, but don't ask for it and stuff like that. So the sustainability of content creation, what you've spoken about a lot publicly, where do you sit in, this is quite a tough question early on. I normally do like fun stuff. And
let's get into it. Yeah.
Where do you stand on the sort of sub goals and like asking for money because you need to pay your rent and that sort of like, I don't want to say manipulative, but there is an element of that in when some people do it when they're streaming.
This is the thing. I think because I'm so new to Twitch, I think even to me now, the concept of like gifting is very strange. I get it because if you look at it in the sense of it's like someone investing in their favorite sports, you know, people pay to watch boxing, they pay to watch all of these different kinds of sports. So it's the same. And they like to support people who they genuinely believe in. I think I draw the line at donation goals for things like paying my rent, because I do feel like in a way that's a little bit of a stretch. I just think that, you know, people, if they voluntarily give you their support by donating or subscribing or gifting, it's a little bit different than kind of, in a way I do see it as a slight guilt trip. Because I think, you know, that person, you don't know their financial state and they could feel really guilty and like feel in some kind of way obliged to help support you. Whereas, you know, I think because I've come from, and I'm not shaming anyone that does it, you know, if you want to do that, that's your choice. But me personally, I've worked since the age of 15, pre-streaming, and still now I have a job alongside streaming because I never, ever, ever want people to feel like they have to put themselves out financially for me. I do streaming because I enjoy it and I love it. And of course, the financial side of it is a massive benefit. But, you know, I just think that there is that line for me and I will never, ever, ever put that on my community to, you know, pay my rent, pay my bills. I'm a responsible adult. If I can't afford to do that by just streaming, I know that, okay, maybe it's time to look at getting a part-time job on the side, because again, that's not somebody else's responsibility, in my opinion, that's yours. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's kind of like, I've definitely been very vocal about it because I do think there is this weird parasocial relationship kind of with streaming. And I never, ever, ever want to cross that line with my community. You know, I never want them to feel like responsible for doing that in any way.
Yeah, I think there's also an element of making people feel like they're getting value out of the way they're donating. So you have the extreme cases where some people donate a lot of money where you're never really going to be able to fully give back to them because the amount of money they're paying is something that you can't offer. And they always say, no, I'm doing this because I want to support you. But with like the sort of regular subs, the people who get involved in communities and hang out on Discords, or they're always in the chat, those kind of people. I feel like one thing I've noticed with you is you're very much about creating that community where it feels like they're almost subscribing to a local community center, but it's online.
Yeah.
Right. So with the people who are streaming and doing that extra step to help out their community and get them involved in things, what kind of things would you suggest to those to try and give more value back?
I think a lot of people, you know, and I think it's also, I've heard a lot of this sort of even just over the past week, a lot of people come online to find some form of comfort. And I've had so many wonderful things said to me from my community about how I bring them some form of comfort, some form of joy and positivity. Because I think I am a massive fan of online. I think it's an amazing, amazing thing. And the things you have access to online are just incredible. But I also think there is that really negative, deeper side of the online space that can affect people mentally. Whereas for me, I never, ever, ever want to be that. I want to be somewhere where people come and they feel uplifted and they feel joy, you know. And because of that, I'm very involved in my community. And I also want to give them back that form of entertainment where, you know, I am obviously looking like a silly sausage, but everybody's loving it and they're having a great time and we're all getting involved. You know, I'm very much like, that's what I want to bring to streaming. That's what I want to bring to Twitch as a platform. Because even when I did music, the whole reason and my passion and my drive behind sort of writing songs was I had specific songs for specific parts of my life growing up that just meant the world because they were attached to something, a feeling, a moment, a time. And I always wanted my music to be that for someone. And then when I couldn't do that with my music, that's when I was like, oh, maybe I can do this with something else. And for me, that is streaming. You know, I can sort of bring comfort and joy and have that kind of nostalgia that someone in 2 years will look back and even if they're not involved in my community, then they'll be like, oh, that time of my life was Meg Sounds Like Egg, which is obviously my name is stupid, but you know, and they look back and they remember the joy and just the good things that happened in their life in that time. So
yeah,
that's kind of what I want to bring with my platform.
I love how introspective you are over why you do things. I think there's a lot of people out there, like you mentioned, who don't really understand the why. They just, they have a list of things that they need out of it, whether it be money, whether it be, oh, I just need to get on and do it. And you've kind of recognize that there's the people out there and you want to support them and make a difference to their lives. So I think that's very valuable for a lot of people listening. And that's the classic thing people say is like, oh, what can I do to be a good streamer? Why should I do this? Why should I do that? And if you can find the reasons why you want to do it, it can help you get on and actually put that stream live. Because if you turn a stream on and you're doing it for the money, the moment the money's not coming in, it's going to feel rough. If you're doing it because you want to get famous and the numbers aren't there, it's going to feel rough. But if you're doing it because you want to make those people who are there every time's day, as long as they keep turning up, which I think if you've got the right mentality, they will, you're always going to win every stream. And so it sounds like you've got that that consistent mindset around why you stream and it helps you to get live.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult because to begin with, it wasn't like I had this epiphany and vision straight away to begin with. It was something that I really sort of discovered over time, you know, like going full time quite quickly into my streaming journey. There would be that financial burden, which I didn't realize I'd have at the time, but you know, I would do a stream and I wouldn't make any money from it. And I'd be like, well, that stream was wasted. That was pointless. And obviously that feeling was so awful. I was like, I don't want this stream to become all about making me financially secure. I want it to be about enjoying it, about loving my time there. And that's when I was like, okay, I'm gonna go get a job. But without doing it, I never would have realized it. And there's so many sort of like pivotal moments in my streaming journey that have brought me to the place I am now. You know, without doing it, without making those mistakes, without trying and failing in some way, I never would have realized actually why I am streaming. So, you know, I do think I get the question a lot in my streams, like, would you recommend streaming or not? Or like, what are your tips to new streamers? And honestly, the first thing I always say is just do it. Mm-hmm. Because until you do it, you might not even like it, you know, because you look at other people do it and you're like, oh my God, it's so amazing. You know, they're making this money, they're having this good time. But until you do it, it's not for everyone. You know, not every single job is for everyone. It's exhausting. It's really weird hours. You know, I look at when I used to work a 9-to-5 jobs and I knew I'd always have my evenings. I knew I'd always have my weekends. Whereas now it's like the minute I sit down and I have 2 hours free, I'm like, why am I not streaming? Mm-hmm. I'm a terrible person if I'm not streaming, you know? So I'm just all these odd times of the day I'm doing stuff, whether it's editing or whatever, it's weird hours and it's just not for everyone. So that's kind of the one piece of advice I give to everyone is just do it, make mistakes. You don't have to have the best setup in the world when you start. Time, it helps you grow and it helps you realize, why am I actually streaming? And then you discover it for yourself.
Well, that was all amazing advice there. But what I want to do now is take a little step back from talking about content creation, streaming, and we'll ask the question that we ask all our guests and find out where you sit in the gaming world in terms of your top five games. I want to find out which ones are going to be going in there and the category and how you want to choose your games, up to you.
Okay.
But a lot of people like to choose based off of the memories, whether it's changed their lives and if the game itself was a particularly good game.
Okay.
So I'll be interested to see where you go with this one.
It's actually so good because I had a conversation literally before I got on the tube to come here with Mitch about like a couple of my favorite games, because I basically put out a tweet last night saying, because if you haven't watched, you know, The Last of Us have just come out with a series, and I said it was in my top three. And then it was kind of like, oh, what was your top two? So I've got this fresh in my mind, which is quite good. So I won't put them in order.
Okay, that's fine.
People can do with that what they will, because they're, I would say these games are all good and notable and amazing to me for different reasons. So I would say The Last of Us, obviously. Mm-hmm. I just think the story was so beautiful. You had the kind of like adrenaline rush moments as well. The music was amazing. The design of the game was just beautiful. And I do think that was one of the turning points for me when I played that game, because I really got immersed in the story. Before that, I was kind of playing like silly, stupid games that didn't really matter. Mm-hmm. But that was like so emotional for me. I would also say I found a love for horror games through streaming.
Okay.
I poop my pants, don't get me wrong. Like, I have the worst time playing them, but there's just something about the adrenaline that goes through my body when I play it that I just love it. And Resident Evil 7 Biohazard for me was just chef's kiss. So good. It was the perfect amount of like action, jump scares. It had a storyline to follow as well. And you genuinely cared to like make it through the game. You know, I sometimes find a horror game where you actually hate the main character. I had that with, I don't want to obviously be rude about any games because they're all amazing. I mean, I could never create a game myself, but The Quarry, I played that recently and I was like, I don't care if these characters live or die. Like, I just have no care for them. So, you know, but whereas in that I was like really invested in the storyline.
Well, that's two games now where you've spoken about the immersion in them, how important that is for you. So is that a big factor for you with gaming?
A little bit. I think there's that side of gaming, because the other one I was going to say is Life is Strange, because like literally the decisions you make or break the story. So I like to be hooked, you know. It's the same as reading. When I was younger, I would never read a book if I didn't get fixed to it on the first five pages. I'd put it straight down, wouldn't pick it up again. So I'm very much the kind of person that I want to be excited to go back and play the game and just like, oh, I can't wait to go back and move on to the next moment. You know, I very much enjoy that kind of thrill of games, which is why I think I like horror games so much, because you're like, what's gonna happen next? You know, I played Outlast and I was like, oh, this is horrible, but I just couldn't keep going back. I just wanted to keep going back and playing more. But then I would say it's so difficult because there's so many games. I'm like, Guitar Hero Metallica Edition was so just
is
literally
that making
specifically
it, or is this
it's not, that's okay. Just me, so I'll move on. The Sims 2.
No, you can talk about games that aren't making it. You just got to make it clear, because right now you're just reeling off games. That's a no.
The Sims 2, I remember playing that a lot.
Is this making it?
That's making it.
Okay,
yeah,
so Sims this is number 2. Four.
Yeah, number 4, Sims 2. And then my final one's going to be so difficult. But yeah, there's just something about that game that has this level of nostalgia. I loved creating characters, you know, and I think as like an insecure 16-year-old girl to like go on there and make someone who was like very conventionally pretty, who like got all the boys and lived in a rich house and had like millions of pounds, I absolutely loved that. So that kind of was a pivotal game for me growing up. I played with my sister, friends would come around and we'd make each other into Sims. So yeah, that's like a big game.
I feel like Sims 2 is the favorite Sims for a lot of people.
You can't top it.
We've spoken about this a little bit in the top five games. Is typically in a series, you said Resident Evil 7, right? Like, why not 1 through 6 and any of the ones after, if there are, I don't know how many there've been.
Yeah.
And there's always one in the series that typically comes out on top because it just happened to be the right combination of everything.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's the same thing with like Mario Kart, with with Smash, or yeah, with whatever game it is. Call of Duty, you always get the same ones there. So it's always interesting that Sims 2, I wonder what it was about Sims 2 that made it so good. Maybe it was the timing of when it came out.
I think you could mod things, so you could download like expansion packs of like just random stuff, which you can't really do nowadays, I don't think so much. And if you can, it's a lot more effort. But I don't know, I think for me, it was just the right level of scuffness. Like, it was kind of really awful, but so good at the same time. Like, you know, when The Sims 4 came out, I was like, it's almost too perfect. Like, the graphics are too good. I like, kind of like, you know, especially going back and playing it now, just getting a glimpse of like 2005 or like 2009, you know, like it's just such a throwback. And I think it was just at a time when I would love to just sit on there for hours and just do the most dumb stuff. So,
that's 4. Last of Us, Resident Evil 7, Life is Strange.
Yep.
And Sims 2. Now, what's number 5? You said this could be hard.
Well, part of me is like, I should say Valorant, because obviously
I've been waiting. I've been like, when's Valorant coming?
I mean, we'll say it, because like, as much as it aggravates me and pains me and makes me want to cry, I love it with my whole being, you know, and I wouldn't be here now without Valorant as a game. Like, obviously I'm wearing the hoodie, you know. So, but like,
imagine you'd said 5 games sitting here in a Valorant hoodie.
Oh, I know, that wouldn't be good, would it? But like, I have invested the most into Valorant: time, money, energy,
mentally. You buy a PC.
Exactly. Like, and I've traveled the world, I've met amazing people all because of this game. So although I think it's difficult to say now, because it's like, it hasn't ended. All of the other games I'm talking about, you know, I've finished them, I've moved on, I can see the good parts. Whereas now I'm very much in the thick of Valorant, still coming across really annoying people and like having really annoying gameplay and like, you know, but like, it is an amazing game, and I am so grateful for everything that I've got because of Valorant.
Well, there we go. There's your top 5 games. I mean, everyone has a very different spin on it. And I think that one was quite a fun one, because you could tell what makes gaming good for you through the decisions you made and the way you spoke about them. So that's always an interesting part of this discussion. I think a lot of people will overlook this and just think, oh, it's just a list of top 5 games. But you really do learn what makes gaming for people based off of the way you talk about them.
Oh, for sure. And I think as well, looking back at like all of them, but Valorant at the moment, only because it's still so new, even the music, like the soundtracks, like when I listen to them now, I'm just like, it throws me right back. Maybe not Resident Evil 7, actually, because that's obviously not really one where the music springs to mind. But, you know, like The Last of Us, that guitar soundtrack, then you've got The Sims, the little piano when you're in sort of the customization mode and all that kind of thing. And then Life is Strange, they actually use real music, not just music made specifically for the game. So I do find that really carries a game for me as well. If the music's good, I'm very much fixated.
Music for you is a big part of your life. Mm-hmm. You've said you've done it on stream, and it was a big part of what you wanted to achieve in life beforehand. Was that your goal when you were growing up, was to be a musician?
Mm. It was always, you know, I'm from a very musical family, but it was always, I wanted to be my own artist. I wanted to write music. And it just didn't work out. I think, you know, I was a very insecure teenager. And I think if you want to become a musician, you have to be ready and open yourself up to a lot of criticism, which I couldn't physically handle in the years where I really had to develop some kind of image or, you know, some kind of idea as to what I wanted to be as an artist. Because I also don't think I realized, I was naive not to realize how brutal the music industry is. Like any kind of creative industry, I think you're opening yourself up to a lot of criticism, a lot of horrible words. A lot of it is very front facing. You have to look a certain way, be a certain size, say the right thing, write the right kind of music. And I think that was the moment when it clicked, because I was like, I'm not willing to put my body on the line for something like this, you know? I'm not in a place to hear these things either. So I think coming out of uni, I was a lot more confident in myself, but I still was like, if I'm not ready at the age of 22, when am I gonna be? Because like, as well with the music industry, it's the kind of thing that you have to be young, you know, you have to be fresh, you have to be of that age. Well, you don't have to be, but you know, you are made to believe that if you don't make it when you're young, that's it. Like, I think now I'm 25 years old. When I was growing up, X Factor had a 25 and overs group. And now being 25, I'm like, I'm not old, I'm young. Like, that just feels so weird to me that like there's a whole separate group if you're 25 or older. So, you know, I'm going in with that mindset that I'm 22. I've got 3 years and that's not long. So I kind of very quickly was like, maybe I'm not going to do this.
I guess the route to success in music is very different now with the internet. The amount of people who've made it through going viral or building up a following.
Yeah.
You know, YouTubers converting into music. And I think that's a TikTok as well, right? Because the Eurovision, was it Sam Ryder?
Yeah.
He came through TikTok, right?
And I have a friend who was in, well, she's like friend, but I know her. She was in the year below me at the university I went to, and she went TikTok viral. And she's now seeing success off the back of that. So, you know, these were things that weren't an option when I was making that decision, because it was kind of that point in my life where I was like, I've invested so much time and energy into this one career path. It's this point now where I make the decision to keep going or I try something new. Because I've never been the kind of person to think you have to have one career goal for your whole life. You know, try stuff, see what takes your fancy, do random stuff. So I was very much at that time, I was like, I'm ready to put this to bed. And I still do music now and I still love it with my whole heart. I don't do it enough. It brings me so much joy. But at the same time, I am so, so grateful to previous me for making that decision, because like otherwise I probably would not be in the best place mentally, because I'd still be slogging it, stressing out, trying to make it in something I'm actually not prepared to even make it in, you know?
Yeah, I remember.
I was so passionate about it. And that was the frustrating thing. Sorry to interrupt you.
That's all right.
It was always this thing. It was like, are you passionate enough? And every being of my body was like, I am so passionate about music. I love it. I can't live without it. And then to be made to feel like you're not passionate enough just because you're not willing to put your body on the line and not willing to sort of kill yourself over this and give up everything, you know, you're just kind of like, in a way, throw away yourself just to make it. I was like, it doesn't mean I'm not passionate enough. It just means that I respect my body. I respect my boundaries and I'm going to try something new because I don't want to spend my whole life.
Yeah. So you're passionate for music, but you're not passionate for what they see music as being. And I think that's a big thing that in the gaming world, people are starting to find out what their passion is directed towards. You know, for example, pro players all get told you should be making content. It's so important for you to make content. It's going to make your career so much longer. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these pro players are not passionate about content. They start streaming, within 3 months or more they'll stop because it's just not something they're interested in doing. No. They want to play, they want to compete.
Mm-hmm.
And so yeah, that passion doesn't always fit what someone else tells you to do. And actually I was gonna say earlier, before you rudely interrupted me,
sorry.
<I'm kidding. laughs> was when I was at school in lower sixth, I think it was, so when I was about 17,
mm-hmm.
we had someone come and do a talk and they went, if you're thinking about what you're gonna do at university, don't worry about what course you do. Do something you're passionate about, something you're interested in. Unless you want to do medicine or law or whatever, you need to go down that path. But still, just be aware that when you finish university in 5 years' time, the world's going to be completely different. The careers that are out there are going to be, most of them are going to be ones that don't even exist right now.
Yeah.
And I remember listening to that and thinking, oh yeah, that's true. Like the world is going to change a lot. And in particular, they reference around technology and so on. And there I was going off to university to study a very scientific course,
mm-hmm.
and then at the end of it dropped out to go and be a coach in a game that didn't even exist when I got told that at school.
No way.
In an industry that was barely professionalized in the way it is now. So that bit of advice I think stuck with me because I was always on the lookout for these other paths that mm-hmm. might be rising up. And that's something you've done actually with your career with the content.
Yeah,
is you've been very flexible in finding new ways to integrate new platforms or different avenues of content into your own content. So talk to me a bit about TikTok and how you've utilized TikTok in a very unique way.
Yeah, TikTok's a weird one for me because, well, it's not weird, but it still doesn't seem like it was any effort for me, which I feel guilty saying, because, you know, I fell into it quite quickly. I found a niche quite quickly. But I remember my boyfriend's editor at the time, her name's Angie. She's the most wonderful, wonderful angel. She's so invested in like your career. She wants you to succeed. And I remember her saying to me, she was like, give me your TikTok. I was like, okay, all right, take it. She was like, I am going to do for a month and a half your TikToks for free, because I want you to realize how crucial it is to take your content to another platform like TikTok and benefit from it. So she started to just take random clips from my streams and edit them and put them up on my TikTok. And I gave her full trust. I said, I trust you. You do whatever you want with it. And then I remember she was still doing it when I did my first stream with my mum. And it was really crazy because I sent it to her. And I was like, oh, do you think that you could do anything with this? And she sent me back the video. She was like, I've made 3 TikToks already. These are the best things I've ever seen in my life. And she was like, if these don't go viral, then what am I doing? And then literally put the first one out and it just blew up. And I was like, what on earth? And then obviously the rest is history, you know? And I love her for that, because I do think I had a bit of imposter syndrome at the time, and I didn't really trust that if I took my content to another platform, which I knew was working on Twitch. And also I do think part of it was laziness as well. Like, I loved the live stuff because it was very much in the moment, and then I didn't really want to do as much work behind the scenes. You know, and I'm so grateful for her for taking that into her own hands and really just spearheading, is that a word?
Yeah, I mean the fact that you had someone who saw that in you, and I think that's something that's the case for a lot of people who get successful. Like you mentioned earlier on, you know, your sister going into her chat saying you should do this.
Yeah.
It's almost like that belief from other people. If you're good at something, this is the whole different end of the spectrum to the music industry, which you were saying, where they were saying, oh, you need to do this, you need to do that, and almost making you feel unwanted.
Yeah.
And so you found that place where people believe in you and they're sending you to the next stage with that TikTok. You mentioned Mrs. G, your mum. Now, you could never predict this, but it is a very creative idea, getting someone who's just so unaware of what's going on in gaming and getting them to do things in a game like Valorant.
Mm-hmm.
How did that first happen? Was this you or your mum who initiated it?
So it was, this is the thing, it was never a content idea. We basically set it as a sub goal. I hadn't told her I'd done it, and I can't remember what it was for. I think it was for like my, something like a milestone in my streaming. So like X amount of followers. And I was like, set a small sub goal to be like, if we hit the sub goal, I will get my mum to play Valorant with me. And I knew she'd be okay with it, because like me, you know, she likes a bit of attention. So I was like, she'll love it, because all these people will be like, I'm Richard G, who we didn't know that was going to be our tagline at the time. And then we hit the sub goal, and I remember going into the bedroom and just being like, mum, how do you feel about playing Valorant with me? And she was like, yeah, go on then. And then I set up the date and the time, and she sat down, and I could not contain my laughter. I was like, this is the funniest stuff I've ever, ever sort of witnessed in my life. Because she is, again, such a powerhouse of a woman. She really knows like what the people want to see. And I'm not saying it was forced in any way, but like she knew she was bad at the game and she was going to own it. She was going to rock it. And she was genuinely clueless. Like, I just think that is the funniest thing. Like watching that gun barrel hit the end of the target instead of the crosshair, I was like, oh, no way. But yeah, honestly, she is just hilarious. And I knew her personality combined with the fact that she just had no idea about the game was going to be perfect. But it wasn't like a content thing at all. It was just like a, oh, this will be funny, won't it, if mum comes and plays Valorant with me. And then I think it also became kind of like really heartwarming in a way, because I've always had a good relationship with my mum. You know, she is absolutely everything to me. And I think it made a lot of people realize that you can and you hope for a good relationship with your parents when it comes to gaming. And I think, you know, as well, what absolutely warmed my heart was hearing stories about people who sent those TikToks to their parents. And because of that, they kind of understood a little bit more that they didn't have to have this weird relationship when it came to their kids gaming. You know, like, it was a good thing and you can find joy in it and you can find a common ground. And as well, as much as I got on with my mum beforehand, we argued a lot, and the amount our relationship has blossomed because of this common ground of Valorant, weird to say, you know, me and mum gaming together, it's like we've never had a better relationship, and I love her with my whole heart. She's actually chaotic.
Yeah, I mean, I love all of the videos. I think the rewatchability of them, you know, that's the kind of thing where you could think, oh, I haven't seen that in a while. I could go back and watch that now because it's so funny.
Yeah.
And the fact that you've turned it into multiple other videos, you now got that, oh, when's the next Mrs. G content coming out?
Yeah.
And it's almost like, weirdly, she's the star now, just but because of the fact that you've managed to facilitate that.
Yeah.
Like, you need to be there because she couldn't do that on her own.
Yeah.
You need to make the content by bouncing off of her.
Yeah.
But it's like that weird, oh, now I'm just the Mrs. G person.
Don't, because I remember when it really started to irk me and I was like, oh, we might have to move on from this content, when I just had people coming into my chat going, where's Mrs. G? And I was like, she's in bed, man. It's past her bedtime. Like, she's not here. They'd be like, when's Mrs. G streaming? I'd be like, she's not. It's my stream. Go away. She actually does stream now.
Oh, really?
Which is really cute. She's trying to get affiliate at the moment. Not plugging, but like in the sense of she's not doing Valorant. She's she's a mental health specialist. So she is qualified to talk about these things, and she does. And it's really, really lovely because, you know, you kind of get the people who love Mrs. G going in there and then getting their Mrs. G fixed that way. So that's nice.
That's nice. Yeah, the reason why I brought that up is because that's one of the things that's frustrated me over the years, is always like, when are you going to talk about this? When are you going to talk about that? Tell me about this. Mm. And sometimes you just want to do what you want to do. And that's what you've said is a big part of your content, is you just do what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So when those people do come in and ask for Mrs. G content, you said it irked you. Has that ever affected you in a way that's made you maybe not go live or sort of snap at people when they ask for it? Has it affected you in a major way?
Not really. I would say I'm not normal in that sense, though. Like, I, for some reason, it's the total opposite. I have this like guilt if I don't go live. You know, it's not like it's anything that ever stopped me wanting to go live, you know, and I still continue to do the content, but I just wanted to make it clear that, like, you know, that was just one element of my streaming, and I have so many other sort of content things coming out of my streams or that I do on my streams. And that is something amazing that I want to put on a pedestal and be like, this is so great. But at the same time, I think the level that irked me was like, it was just like, hold your horses, like, come in and sit in my streams for a little bit, and really see what the vibe is here, see what we do. And then Mrs. G's just a bonus, you know, mm-hmm. when, if she's on the stream and you catch her on the stream, brilliant. But, you know, there's so much more to the stream than just Mrs. G. I'd never snap at people, though. I never get angry, because I just think that, like, you know, that's what they're coming in for.
Mm-hmm.
If they want Mrs. G, then fair enough. But, you know, I hope that they would stay in that stream and see that there's so much more to the stream than just my mother. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, I think anyone who's listening to this who hasn't seen your streams before should go in. There is a lot of chaos and a lot of fun. You like to use your soundboard as well, which mm-hmm. is always good fun.
Mm-hmm.
But just take a pause here. I did forget to ask you a question I ask everyone as well, which is, what's your greatest ever gaming achievement? And we've just been talking about content, so I'm intrigued as to whether it is related to content or related to something that gaming's allowed you to do, or whether it's a particular moment in a game that you've completed or had a big success in.
Maybe completing Outlast. That was a big one, because I honestly never thought I was going to get through that game. Like, it was hell on earth. By
complete, is that get to the end?
Like, finish the
main story?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I'm sure there's many achievements. Like, yeah. I know that there's some real hardcore gamers out there who are like, did you collect every coin? Probably not. Like, I don't know if that's even a thing in Outlast. But, like, you know, I very much was just so happy to have actually gotten through a game like that. Gaming achievements, I think, you know, being flown out to Copenhagen and going to Istanbul with Riot, that was huge to me. And to be acknowledged as like an official influencer of Valorant, that was something I never imagined happening. You know, I kind of got in there quite early on, but as I've grown, I feel like, you know, it's nice to be noticed by the game that you love and you play often. You know, it's
almost
really,
didn't
really
make
nice.
The top five,
yeah, but not for personal reasons, only because I'm really in the thick of it. But yeah, I would say that is definitely one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, meeting my boyfriend.
Gesturing over there. He's so if anyone is watching, this is our first guest's guest. So someone who's come with the guest to watch the podcast. Mm. I'm sure it'll happen more in the future. I mean, I found you through Marcus, I believe, because mm-hmm. Marcus joined the org that I was a part of, yeah. and then through that found you and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess we could talk a bit about Marcus
He's
in the room. So
I mean, I'd just like to preface this by saying I'm obviously better at the game than him, you know. So like, but yeah. it was yeah.
That's why he's now commentating it, and you keep playing. And exactly.
Is because I, you know, I didn't meet well. I actually slid into his DMs and asked him to play a game of Valorant with me. So without Valorant, I would say that's a gaming achievement in itself because I'm now.
So
with him.
Why did you slide into the DMs?
Now, genuinely, when I say this, it's not because I don't love and fancy him now, but at the time, he was just so good at the game and I was so bad. And I really, really wanted someone to kind of like show me the ropes. Like I didn't, because I know I say slid into his DMs. It wasn't for any reason other than that. It just happened that our friendship progressed and blossomed through the period because we met in the third lockdown. So we had so much time on our hands and we played a lot of games together and then we used to watch movies on Discord. And I just think that time that we spent with each other allowed it to progress into something more because maybe different for him. Like he definitely fancied me off the bat, like not to be like, he said it himself. I'm not, you know, being cocky in any way.
Yeah.
But for me, it wasn't like that. You know, I did friend zone him a couple of times.
And he kept committed.
It was more the fact that like from the day I met him, and this was coming from a place of my previous dating history, I just had to beg for the bare minimum, which for me is communication. And the minute I met Marcus, you know, he'd always message me good morning. He'd always message me good evening. If he was busy, he would tell me, he'd be like, I'm really sorry if I'm not responsive today. I'm doing X, Y, Z, just to let you know. And I was like, hold on. What is going on? A man telling me that, you know, what's going on with his day without me having to beg? Like, it was just shocking to me. And I think that that's when I started to realize that he was a good egg. And despite him dressing like Eminem, you know, I could potentially fall in love with him. So, and here we are now 2 years later. So,
and you just moved to London with him. So,
yeah
good luck with all that.
Thank you.
No, Marcus is a Valorant streamer himself, now mm-hmm. commentating a bit. How did you two meet at first? So you mentioned how you asked to play Valorant with him,
mm-hmm.
but I assume there was a moment before that where you met. How was that connection made?
So it was literally like the first week out of lockdown. So it was really difficult because I think it got to that point where like we knew that we wanted to meet to really like find out if we had that connection in real life as well. So we were just counting down the days to be let out of lockdown, to be honest, because, you know, we weren't going to break the rules or anything. Like as much as I fancied him at the time, I was like, wait till we're allowed out. And then literally the week it got announced, 4 days later, he planned to come down and stay. And I love his parents, but I remember him messaging me and being like, Mum says, it might be better if I stay in a travel lodge. And I was like, just stay at mine, like, you know, like it's fine. Oh, like it's not. And it was so funny because obviously there was like, you know, that want to meet each other, and then like for him to be like, Mum says I should stay in a travel lodge. I was like, no. But yeah, so we met sort of 4 days after lockdown ended, and this was after 3.5 months of talking to each other every day, pretty much. I think it was about 3.5 months. So it was just a long wait. And I think because of that time, I really, really sympathized for long distance relationships, because that was why I friend zoned him initially, because I was like, I can't do long distance. I'm quite needy. I like to be with someone. I like to spend my time with someone. And it felt like a long distance thing because he did live 5 hours away, but it was, you know, didn't feel like that because he was always with me. You know, he kind of, we had the privilege of him being a streamer so that he could just come and stream from mine. You know, he didn't have to worry about his job. So very quickly, we kind of moved in with each other and yeah.
Worth the investment.
Yeah.
And you found a good man amongst the many men in Valorant.
He's all right.
That you do make a lot of content around men in Valorant. So Marcus, you just mentioned being one of the good ones.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the things that I've always appreciated about you with your content is you are very open to telling people that are doing wrong with the things they're saying. And it is a big problem in gaming. It's a big problem in society, but it's highlighted a lot in gaming because of the online anonymity. So we're going to go from a fun topic talking about a good man to the interactions you've had with some not so nice people.
Yeah.
And how you deal with it personally. Mm-hmm. Now, it's not possible for all women to stand up for themselves in gaming. In fact, for a lot of people, they've learned through the way society is built to not do that because it will get you in trouble and it can work against you. Mm-hmm. But you've mentioned your family and yourself are quite, you know, strong women, and you talk back when someone treats you badly.
Yeah.
How's that affected your experience in gaming and the way people interact with you?
I think it's still really odd for me because I, from a young age, made it very clear that, like, I wasn't going to accept any sort of disrespectful comments. I had a level of naivety or privilege in a way of, like, never really experiencing anything really awful in my life. I think it was a shock when I first started gaming, some of the things I heard, and I couldn't get my head around it to begin with. But I think because of the kind of person I am, you know, I very quickly became comfortable with calling it out. And I knew the lengths I was willing to go to do that. Obviously, I never wanted to reciprocate that kind of behavior. I never wanted to make any threats. I never wanted to disrespect someone because of the way they were. So I was never going to insult someone back in the same way. But I did want them to make... I wanted to make it clear, and I wanted them to know that I wasn't going to tolerate their behavior, and that I wanted to make them feel some kind of... not embarrassment, but just know how it feels to feel vulnerable. Because I think for a lot of women, hearing them talk about when they experience horrible comments online, it's because the difficult part is being totally out of control and being made to feel vulnerable and like you aren't good enough. And, you know, I always say this as well about the common feeling that a lot of women have in gaming, that we don't want to play bad. And if we do, we feel guilt because we're like, I don't want to play into this idea that women aren't good enough to game. So we're carrying that already. Right? Yeah, so there's that added pressure. And then on top of that, you don't want to be made to feel like you don't belong. So a lot of women, you know, they will mute, and I have nothing but respect for every single person who goes through toxicity in gaming. And I do think sometimes muting actually is better for your health, like in the sense of you don't have to worry about, you know, putting yourself in a position where you have to kind of like raise your voice or say something back. And I will do it myself still sometimes. I'm like, this is not worth the effort. I'm sorry. But a lot of the times I just want and hope that the things I say to them make them not do it again. Because I'm like, not every woman is gonna stay quiet. You know, you don't have that control over every single woman. And we are gonna say something back, and we are gonna stand our ground because we belong in this space just as much as you do. And I don't know at what point in their life, I think I've put it down now to entitlement. You know, I think a lot of men, it's not their fault. It's a lot of it is nurture. And that doesn't mean that they shouldn't be held accountable, but I think that they're never told that they don't belong to a space, you know, like, and that's just something that dudes have growing up. They have access to pretty much everything, you know, except from feminine things like putting on makeup, a skirt, which is something that we're now fighting for, and we're fighting it against toxic masculinity. But whereas women have had a lot of that, they've had a lot of, ah, oh, you can't really do that, you don't really belong here, that's not really your job. So we're used to hearing it, but men aren't used to hearing, shut up, I am here, get used to it. Mm. Okay, this isn't just your space. So I think sometimes the reaction that does come off the back of women standing up for themselves is so extreme because they don't know how to deal with it. They're like, someone's told me no, what do I do? Like, it's just mind-boggling to me. But anyway, I'm waffling.
I've watched a lot of your content, so I've seen what it's like, but some of the people listening or watching right now might not have an experience of that. So I kind of want to have a bit of fun here.
Okay.
To try and like lighten the mood a bit. I'm never, ever toxic based around something someone can't control. Mm-hmm. If someone is rude to me and they do something bad, I'll also occasionally bite back about an action that they've done, but I'm mm-hmm. not, I've never done it about anyone. So just want to say that now,
because this is an example, toxic. Right?
But like, imagine I am a misogynistic man. I'm telling you, you can't do something. Like, I mean, classic, you even put out a tweet of like the dictionary of things men would say, mm-hmm. you know, the classic thing is, oh, play this character because you're a woman or whatever yeah. it is. So I'm here and I'm like, oh, Meg, you should play Sage in Valorant because that's what women do, right?
Yeah.
How would you then, how would you respond? Give me a
play
little bit.
Sage and wall them in.
Play Sage and wall them in.
No, I, it's bad because I think because I experienced it so much, I'm like, I am willing to throw my Elo and troll back now. I'm like, here's how it feels. You know, throw a Phoenix Molly on me, I'll just blimmin' do it back. You know, I'm kind of getting to that point now where I'm like, have a taste of your own medicine. And I don't really ever do it, but I'm getting there. But I think it's difficult because a lot of these are just stereotypes for women, you know, that Sage is a comfort pick for a lot of people, even Mrs. G.
Oh. The alarm, hello.
because it's one of the most simple agents to play. And I wonder if that's why people affiliate it with women, because they're like, women aren't smart enough to play complex agents or whatever. But it is a comfort pick for a lot of people. And you think as a woman coming into a new game and you're already in a new territory, you're going to want to pick the easiest agent.
Mm-hmm.
I've been there. I was a Sage main. It just angers me because I'm like, there's so many things in this game that women can't just do. Like, they can't have a bad game. They can't play a duelist. Like, they can't do these things. And it's just like, just let us live, man. Mm-hmm. Like, the amount of games that I come across with dudes who play Sage, who bot frag, and then you're like, okay, that's really poopy. Like, you had a bad game. It's nothing to do with their gender. But yeah. It's like every single element of a woman playing a game is to do with their gender.
Yeah, and so like a clutch, you know, like you're being a 1v1 or a 1v2.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about it is, and this is the thing that a lot of people don't understand when they hear about this, and it's something that I learned through watching more streamers, by being friends with people and talking about their stories and stuff like that, is 1v1 clutch, you lose it. Like you said, if you're a guy, a lot of the time you'll get a comment that'll be around how you did it.
Mm.
Or you get a comment around, oh, you should have done this, or you should have done that. Now, women can get that too, and it might be completely unrelated to their gender, but it's the kind of the frequency and how it comes across, and then the times where it then does involve your gender, where then that's when the problem starts to arise. And so then when people do just want to say, like, out of just frustration, oh, you should have done this, when they're trying to give you unwarranted advice, which they do to anyone, it's then muddled in with the rest of it, right?
Yeah, I think it's difficult to receive the criticism on the game when it's what you receive it often, and usually for the wrong reasons. And I try to very much make sure I'm differentiating the difference between someone being toxic and someone being a misogynist, you know. But it's like, as well, I'm sure there's probably clips out there of a woman whiffing and a man whiffing, and the reaction between the both, it's like, oh, woman bad. And it's just, then it's like, oh, he just whiffed, unlucky. You know, yeah. It's just, it baffles my mind, because I'm like, can you not see that it's just normal? Even Radiance whiff, even like, oh, you know, I could talk about it for hours, but it is just that instant kind of like woman. And the pressure that we carry as women as well when we play, because we're like, oh my God, what if I whiff? And then they go, oh, woman moment, you know, like it's,
and
just...
It's all the comments as well, right? So the classic one which you hear and you're like, I know you're trying to be nice, but it just comes across the wrong way, is, I didn't realize women could be this good. The amount of times I've seen that, and that comes from a place of, that to be fair, they might off the back of it then open their eyes to it, and that might have been the first time where they've seen a woman be good at the game, and so now they're like, oh, actually, this is fine, women can do it.
Yeah.
But the comment is, like you said, it's just unnecessary.
And it's super casual as well. I think sometimes, actually, I had a game the other day where it was really casual, kind of not crossing the line, comments about me being a woman, taking the mick out of my voice, calling me an e-girl, things like that, that aren't really enough to kind of warrant a reaction from me, in my opinion, but at the same time are so casual, I think they're worse.
Yeah.
Because I can't really turn around to them and go, this is wrong, you can't say this, because they're so casual, the comments and the little jabs and the little picks, and it just really irks me. But I think, and I hope, the more that we see competitive females playing and pro games with women, the more they will understand that we are getting to that level, and we have a space and we have a platform now, and, you know, we are here. And I think the more that this happens and the more women we see coming in and playing, and I think that goes for like marginalized genders just in general, the more that we see these minorities coming into the space, the less they will feel the power, the less that they will feel that they can say anything and get away with anything, because like there's more people fighting back. And that's why also it's so important that men start to call out other men, because they will know that it's less likely that they're just going to get off saying these things scot-free. Mm-hmm. And I think that's so important. That's the one thing I'm so hot on at the moment, is the amount of games that I have where I will get verbally abused or harassed for being a woman, and the men will sit on the team and just say nothing. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, can you hear this? Like, is this not shocking to you? And then I remember it probably isn't, because they don't hear it that often.
Yeah.
So I think it's really important to start calling people out. Yeah, sure.
You mentioned the normalization of it. I think what's really nice, I've noticed quite a lot recently, is just top streamers who are, you know, Immortal, Radiant, and Valorant, so the top like 1% of the game, and just hearing women in comms just normally, and it's just, and you're like, oh, they're probably a pro. And it's great, because it just normalizes the fact that they're there. And the same thing goes for streamers, right? Watching passionate streamers of all the different genders, we mentioned marginalized genders, people representing their communities, and they're doing it on stream, mm-hmm. and just comfortably, passionately gaming like it's normal.
Yeah.
And that's creating new role models for people. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's a really good place to be. And I think in particular, mentioned women, but it's not just women, it's you know, people from different communities. And I think that's going to be the next step for gaming, if we can start to accept it and normalize it.
I think that was something I was reading recently, because I do like to read up on these things. And it was something about how if we create a space for these people socially to talk about their experiences and uplift each other and kind of like share different ways of dealing with certain situations, the more comfortable they're going to be playing the game, and the more normal it's going to become them playing the game, because, you know, you'll hear their voices. And that's why for me, muting isn't enough. It's important that our voices are heard, and that we are noticed as a force to be reckoned with in a way, and that you can't just walk all over us. You can't say what you want to say, like, without some form of consequence, or without, you know, feeling some form of embarrassment for saying something stupid. Because at the end of the day, it's really uneducated, half the stuff that's said to me, really stupid, and it just comes from a place of sadness. And again, that's something I say to a lot of people who have to deal with toxicity online. I'm like, don't take it as a reflection of you, take it as a reflection of them. You know, they have to be a certain kind of person in a certain kind of place mentally to say those to people. And actually, it's really, really sad to hear it, because you know that they're probably going through some form of pain themselves. Like, not to make them the victim in it, because they're not, and they are accountable for their actions and their behavior. But at the same time, you have to be sad, like really sad or angry or annoyed at something. And the burden that they must carry or feel mentally is so much worse, you know.
Yeah.
And that's sometimes how I cope with it as well, as I'm like, I'm happy, I'm in a healthy relationship, I have amazing friends around me, my career is growing. So although they're saying these horrible things to me, I am deep down genuinely happy. So I can take it, I can hear it, and I know it's not me. It's not a me problem, it's a them problem. So
yeah, I think that's something I'm trying to learn at the moment, because it's not toxicity based around who I am as a person, which I can't even imagine how that would feel, is something that's completely out of your control.
Mm-hmm.
I do get people who are rude to me about, you know, my career, the way I play in game and stuff like that. And I'm still trying to work out how to deal with it. But the same kind of thing which you just said there can apply to it. So for everyone who's trying to work out how to deal with toxicity, just taking a step back to appreciate that you're comfortable with who you are in your life, and that they're the ones who are potentially struggling, might be unhappy, and might have something that's underlying in their lives that making them feel the need to comment. Because I've never commented on anything for other than positivity, or furthering my understanding of the world and educating myself and things like that. And I can't imagine what it takes for someone to feel the need to comment something rude.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, like, I will bark at men online. I will do dumb stuff. I will say stupid things back. But the one thing I will never, ever, ever, ever do is make them feel like bad for something that isn't relevant, isn't something that's in their control, like their gender, you know, like in the sense of it's irrelevant. It doesn't matter. It's a weird thing that people fixate on that just does not matter. Like, it's not that deep, fam. Like, it's just a thing. And I think it's more about who you are as a person, the impact that you have, and the fact that I am coming into this space, coming into gaming, wanting to be positive, wanting to do the right things is enough. Like, for me to know that what they're saying isn't valid, you know?
Mm-hmm. And it's great to have you here. The reason why I wanted to get you on is because I feel like you're a great role model for that mindset. And so hopefully you can continue doing what you do, it be on TikTok, Twitch, with your community, with stuff that goes viral, just spreading that message.
That's my real thing now. Like, just on like a final note, because I know we're probably going to wrap this up. So I'm sticking on my
breath. It's fine.
But like, the real drive and the real want and the real need for me now in my own career, and what really just keeps me going, is knowing that I want to create a positive space for women and marginalized genders, and just make people feel safe online and give them a home in a way, and somewhere to come to, and know that those things that may be said to you online will never be said here. Mm-hmm. And the things that are irrelevant to gaming will never be brought up. Like, who you are as a person doesn't matter. It's more about the things you contribute to the space and the things that you say to people that matter. Like, I just want to really instill positivity and I really hope to build a home and also at the same time make an impact. Like, really speak up for the people who feel like they can't speak up for themselves. I want to do that. I want to be a loud mouth. Beep.
Thank you for censoring that. But okay, we'll take a break away from talking about society as a whole, and there's a lot of nice insight there. But there is something I want to talk about, because it's an exciting time for you. We mentioned at the start you've just moved to London.
Yep.
Next stage of Meg's life is just kicking off. Mm-hmm. Tell me about what is now happening in your life. What's next? You've just announced, when we're recording this on Twitter, you have the host role on Charlotte Tilbury streams.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about that. How did that come about?
So it was really random. I just got an email one day, and I actually thought it was a sponsored stream, and it was just mentioning, you know, that Charlotte Tilbury was coming into the space and would I be interested in, you know, being part of it. And I was like, obviously, yes. You know, I've been a big fan of makeup from a young age, especially when I was, you know, going through sort of my insecure periods of my life. Like, makeup was really comforting for me. So I've always been aware of Charlotte Tilbury. I owned a lot of her products as well. So the minute I got that email, I was like, oh my God, this is like two worlds colliding in the best way possible. Not realizing really what it was. You know, I just come from a job of like selling beauty products, and I didn't enjoy it at all. There were good parts, there were bad parts, but I didn't like the forcefulness of selling. So I was like, I hope it's not this. And it really isn't. Like, I wouldn't have taken it if it was. And learning more about Charlotte Tilbury as a brand as well, like, it's just the most wonderful thing and the most wonderful reason as to why they're coming to Twitch. It's to create, again, a safe space for people. We're going to be doing Get Ready With Me and gaming, podcasts, makeup artists are going to be coming in and doing people's makeup. And it's a really going to become a space to champion all walks of life in the gaming industry, you know, creators, people behind the scenes, just phenomenal, phenomenal people who we hope to get on the platform and really showcase them and champion them and be like, this is gaming, you know, and it's just going to be amazing. And then with the power of obviously great makeup as well, that people, there should be lots of freebies, lots of giveaways and stuff. And then kind of like combining that, because you think about, you know, all walks of life in terms of anything creative, you know, makeup is such a massive part of that. It's in the sense of, you know, I'm sure you've had makeup popped on.
I actually love getting makeup done for shows. I wouldn't do it myself just because I'm lazy. Mm-hmm. I do actually have a little bit of makeup I take when I do shows that don't have makeup just to help, because I get very shiny. But yeah, I love the feeling when I've got my makeup done for me at events.
It's just a bit of confidence, isn't it? Yeah. And that's really kind of like what we want to promote, is just that little bit of confidence it brings, you know. And I think, you know, with streaming as well, I am now super comfortable with streaming without makeup on, but also the joy I get from like turning on my stream and someone going, oh my God, your eyeshadow is amazing. Me being like, thank you very much. Like, it just is, you know, in all walks of life, makeup. And I just think that this is a great way of Charlotte Tilbury coming to the platform, obviously showcasing her beautiful makeup, but at the same time for the right reasons. You know, it's not because they want to make everyone buy their products. Obviously, if that happens, great, because the products are genuinely amazing. But the whole reason of the channel is to just create this space where we can showcase everyone. all walks of life in gaming, and I'm very excited to do it.
I think it's a really good time for it as well, for gaming to start collaborating with Makeup, and especially with the kind of people who are in gaming, and it's sort of encouraging them that this is a place where the same people who like Makeup can also like gaming, where, as we mentioned earlier on, that can often have been growing up been told to be, this is the feminine things you do, these are the masculine things you do, and actually the world has changed in a place where men can be feminine, women can be masculine from those traditional roots. And it's something that I'm coming to terms with as well. You know, I've had my nails painted to see how it felt. It wasn't for me, but at least it's something I can do if I want to.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's all about trying and experimenting and seeing what works for you. You know, and I'm just so excited to open up that world and bring people from the Makeup world into gaming and gaming into the Makeup world. You know, it is, isn't it crazy? You can like more than one thing, guys. Like, isn't that insane? Like, they don't have to be separate, like you said. And it's just taking two things that you're grown up to be told are very masculine and very feminine, and just merging the two and putting it all in a pot and mixing it up and going, it's both. Like, it's anything, it's anyone, it's any person. Like, both apply to all. So I'm super excited, and what an opportunity. You know, my mum is telling everyone, she's like, Charlotte Tilbury, you know Charlotte Tilbury? And then you've got people as well coming going, oh, I didn't know who Charlotte Tilbury was, but I told a friend and now I know. Like, because it's a big thing. She's like top end high-end makeup, you know, it's a massive name. And Charlotte Tilbury herself is so involved as well. I think that's the weirdest thing to me. You know, where you have brands where it's like their name, but they're not really involved.
There's some brands where there's a name and the person doesn't even exist.
Exactly. Whereas, like, she honestly is just this powerhouse of a woman who is so invested in just building this amazing, amazing space, and just all centered around makeup, but at the same time centered around the people. Like, that's it. It's all about the people. She listens to the community. As you know, Twitch is all about, it's all about your communities, and it's honestly gonna be great. I'm so excited.
And that's amazing. You're now in London so that you can do that. And there's some other things as well in your life. I don't know, I mean, I've told you when this is going out. Are you feeling comfortable enough to share it here?
Yeah, I guess, because this will come out after.
And if it's not, hopefully we have spoiler. Time as well. There's a few things coming out at the moment, so this is pre-recorded. From what you've told me, this has already been announced. Do you want to reveal it here? I mean, it feels weird to reveal it when it's not going out yet, but
yeah,
you got something coming out that you're excited to tell me about.
So this has happened at the point of this podcast coming out, which is crazy because I've been sat on this for a few months now. I remember being approached and I was like, me? I'm actually joining Fnatic as a content creator. So I'll be super involved, hopefully at a lot of the events as well. But it's just huge. Like, I remember kind of coming into the world of gaming and finding out about Fnatic, and, you know, all of my friends knew them from like CS, and they've always been a name, especially in UK esports. And then to now be saying I'm joining Fnatic as Fnatic Meg as a content creator is just insane, really, to be honest.
And this is going to be where you're going to be working with the Valorant team a little bit.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you haven't seen the announcement video already, go have a look. But you'll see the Valorant team there. I'm going to be heavily involved in the Valorant side of things for Fnatic. Just sort of making sure that I'm creating cool content and with a lot of the players and stuff.
This is one thing that I think a lot of people overlook with content creation. You've managed to turn being your own content creator on your own channels into, I'll host for you, I'll do this live stream for you. Now with Fnatic, they're going to be utilizing you as a on-screen talent, like broadcast talent, like you see typically in esports shows, but you're now doing it as a content creator.
Yeah.
So this isn't the Fnatic network. So that's they have a community system where they get people of all different sizes, give them support and get them involved in things.
Yeah.
So Fnatic have got you in as a content creator for the org. And with that, you're going to be doing some amazing opportunities, go out to events, get involved with the Valorant team. For me, I'm always interested when people join orgs, because I've been part of teams from the competitive side.
Yeah.
Are you already feeling like, you know, like the whole, like, I want to bleed black and orange? Is that sort of like, are you already getting that feeling?
I'm very like, if I'm involved, I'm involved, you know, I'm invested. And I mean, the merch is unreal. Like, that's the biggest thing. I was kind of, because I care about my fashion, but I knew that obviously ASOS and Fnatic were like hand in hand, so their merch has to be droppy. And it is dead nice, the quality and everything. So, you know, I was so grateful for that, because there's obviously, when you get involved with an org, you like, well, me personally, I am just the same way with games, very invested, very involved. You know, I feel like I didn't grow up watching football, but this is like being a football hooligan for mm-hmm. me now, like, but just with Fnatic, you know, I can really kind of get involved and be involved, I guess, in the fan culture. I've always been a fan of Fnatic. I've always supported them. You know, I was really friendly with Mystic. And I've always wanted Fnatic to win everything, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I mean, I'm a Fnatic yeah. fan in Valorant. I mean, I got Mystic on one of my earliest pods, and it was because I was a fan of Fnatic, met him through their sort of community, and I had a good chat with him, and that made me even more invested. So now you get to be involved in the team, you're going to be that next level of invested.
It's like gone from, no, I was going to say fan to groupie, but I don't think that's the right reference. That's not right.
So this is something I've actually spoken to some people who work at football clubs with. Yeah. So when you're a staff member at a sports club, you do become this crazy super fan, because in a weird way, it's not just the success of the team that you care about, but it's like, this actually affects my life now. This is my job. You know, when I go into work on the next day or the next piece of content you do, you're going to be talking about that result. So being able to, you know, there's nothing worse than when you're part of a team and they start losing. Having been a coach, I mean, it's going to be, you're going to have some tough days.
Yeah.
You're going to have some tough
days. Well, they're not going to lose now. Have you seen their team?
I mean, it does look pretty saucy. Yeah. I mean, when I was with Guild, Leo was always like the guy who saved us in games. Like, oh my God, Leo's in the 1v3.
It's stacked.
Yeah,
like it's so stacked. And I think as well for me, sort of the minute that I heard from the Fnatic team about getting me on board, it's the same for them. Like every single person who works at Fnatic is so invested, and there's a reason for that. They really have like built this homely kind of feel to the org that you really care. And the minute I was brought on board, and the way that they would speak to me and the way that they would talk to me about ideas, like everyone is so invested in like your growth, and wanting you to succeed. And it goes across all walks of life in Fnatic, with everyone I've met. It's just, it is a really, really fantastic org. And I think as well, they have this big name, but they also live up to it. You know, they are just, it's crazy. 'Cause I'm like, Fnatic Meg sounds like egg. Like, yeah. So I can't wait, because at this point I will have been able to talk to it about everyone.
But at the moment it's just amongst the close friends.
Yeah, like,
you want to tell the world.
Yeah.
But I'm excited to see the announcement that just happened. The thing for me, I'm just gonna ask it now. Mm-hmm. It's just one little personal request. Now that you're in Fnatic, mm-hmm. you reckon you could get Boaster to come on the podcast? You know, well.
It's out of my hands. I mean, listen. I'll try.
I want to get him to dance to our theme tune. I just want to get him to be.
I feel like Yinsu's the woman you want to speak to.
I've already spoken to Yinsu.
Did she say similar?
Hopefully, we can get her on.
Yeah. That's a question to ask Yinsu when she's on here. But, you know, I think.
I'm just working my way through Boaster's close circle. Like,
I definitely don't think I'm the person to get him on here. You know, like, well, I'll
ask you in 6 months and you're going to be besties.
Oh, yeah.
And you'll do a song together. And.
Well, at this point, you would have seen the announcement video.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I've seen the announcement.
Which is me pitching Valorant the Musical to the team.
Okay.
And obviously, Boaster's on board.
Uh huh.
Maybe not the rest of the team. So maybe if you're up for a theme song, at this point we'll be super, super experienced in film and theme songs together.
Okay. So. I mean, we'll look forward to the announcement that I've just watched. I think
it's really good, right, Gregan?
Yeah, it was amazing. So I loved the bit where you said, anyway, I think we're pretty much out of time now, because mm-hmm. as much as I'd love to talk to you forever, we've both got lives to live. And
food to eat.
People who are listening have got lives to live.
Yeah.
So we'll stop distracting you from whatever you're doing. But I do appreciate you coming on.
Thank you for having me.
I'm excited to have you in London.
Yeah.
When you said it, I was the most excited I've been in ages in a Twitch chat. I was like spamming, like, we get to go hang out.
It's crazy. Like, the amount of people that I just think that I never acknowledged were in London. Because if I did, I think I would have been very sad, because I couldn't meet up with them a lot. But now being in London and I've had so many people reach out, like, let's go for drinks. I'm like, hold on my bank account 1 second. Uh-huh. But at the same time, I'm like, yes, let's go for drinks. Like, it's so exciting to be in the big city. Big Meg sounds like egg. Big things happening. It's
big
crazy.
Big things happening in London.
Big things happening on the podcast. You know, like, it's, yeah, very exciting. So thank you for having me.
No, it's great. And then there's one last question I have to ask.
Okay.
I'm sure everyone knows the question by now at home, but I don't know if you know it. What does gaming mean to you?
Oh, I'm going to cry. No, gaming is just life for me now. It's weird. It's a passion. It's life. It's creativity. It's positivity. It's friends. It's so many things. Like, it's just chaos. It's love. Yeah, and you know, gaming has completely impacted my life at this point, for the better, for the worse. I'm sick of losing on Valorant. I can't do it anymore. But yeah, gaming is just a gateway to many, many things, many opportunities, many possibilities. And I implore everyone who games or hasn't gamed or wants to game to A, do it, B, impact gaming positively, and just have fun. Like, C, just have fun. That's it.
Have fun.
That's it, Gregan.
That's it.
Just have a bit of fun in it.
Thank you very much, Meg.
Thank you, Gregan.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.